So anyway, for this evening's talk, very good. For this evening's talk, it is Christmas time in a few days' time, and one of my driver today, he went to do a little bit of Christmas shopping, which he hadn't, because he said there were so many crowds out there. And it brings to mind, people always say that they, well, they like the spirit of Christmas, but there is too much materialism in Christmas. It brings to mind the idea of what materialism is, and why there is so much materialism in this world, and is there an alternative, and why is it that so many people complain about it, but they never manage to do anything about it? So today's talk will be about materialism and the escape from materialism without bringing the whole world into chaos. So first of all, the idea of materialism, that sometimes it's like we get caught up, you know, in this flow of a river, which we can't just go against the current of it, that everybody else is buying things and the whole economy depends upon purchasing stuff, and you know, it's so hard actually to get out of that stream. And you know, we know its effects, it's just not nice. At least, you know, at least Buddhism has got a good reputation. A couple of people have already sent me a cartoon doing the rounds of the Dalai Lama getting his Christmas present. And the Dalai Lama gets his Christmas present, he opens the box, and of course it's empty. And he turns around, thank you, that's just what I wanted. Nothing. And at least people are understanding. This Buddhism, we're trying our very hardest to actually to emphasizing something much more than material comfort. And I don't need to explain to you that there's no end to the things you can buy and the things you can want. And what happens to them? You just get more and more stuff. In monastery, where I'm the boss monk, the abbot, the head cheese, I made, every now and again I can make a rule. And one of the rules I made over there is all the monks, they have to move once every 2 years. You know, from one hut to another hut. And they can't use the tractor, they can't use the car to move their stuff. They have to move it. Wheelbarrow's okay, carrying it is okay, but they can't use anything more than that. And it's amazing, just even as a monk, after 2 years, it's amazing how much stuff you accumulate. And at least they remember that, and so that they can learn how to have less stuff. And because we emphasize this, you know, in monastic life, you know, less is more freedom. And this is not just what we say, this is what we do. You're all welcome to go and visit my cave when I'm going to Penang tomorrow. You can actually go in there and have a look how I live. That's my holy of holies. That's where I live and sleep and spend so much time. And there is nothing there. It's just an empty space. And that reminds me of just the beautiful freedom. One of the most important parts of my training as a monk in Thailand, I've been a monk almost 40 years now. After 5 years, you are kicked out of the monastery. Off you go. Travel. And you had to walk wherever you wanted to go with all your possessions carried on your back. You couldn't leave anything with anybody. You couldn't just say, look after this for me, I'll be back in a year. No, you gave it away. Or you carried it with you. And imagine just carrying all your possessions, you know, in a bag on your back wherever you went. Now, for many people, they wouldn't be able to move a step with so much stuff which we carry. And even for me, I've been training as a monk for 5 years. Even for me, I had far too much stuff at first, but after 2 days, I'd given half of it away. And then for the next year, I was traveling around Thailand, walking from place to place with everything I owned in the whole world on my back. And it was so, so light. You didn't need anything. As a monk, you'd go anywhere in the morning with your alms bowl and people would feed you. Maybe only just rice, that's all you got sometimes. But it's enough to keep you going for another day. and you would sleep out in the forest or in the paddy fields, and that's all you needed. No home, no possessions, no debts, no worries. It was one of the most wonderful times of my life. And it was a time when I could go to any crossroad and I could go left, right, forward or turn round. No duties, no appointments, no place to go, no promises, total freedom. And it was a beautiful experience which I wish each one of you could actually have at least once in your life. Where everything you own, you just carry. It taught me how little people need. Sometimes we think we need heaps and heaps of stuff. Now I've told this story before, I think even about 2 or 3 months ago. And this is one of the stories in my new book, but it's one of the most brilliant stories of explaining the beauty when we have few things and why it is, the reason why we tend to get so much stuff. And it was a story of the bhikkhuni, the nun in the cave. Now, we don't just have monks, we have Buddhist nuns as well. If you come here next week, you will find one of our nuns giving the Friday night talk, Venerable Hasapanya. She's just come back from overseas, so she'll be here doing the talk next week. But there's an old Buddhist story of this bhikkhuni, this nun, living in a cave. Very, very simple, very peaceful, feeling a lot of freedom. And one day she would also take the bowl and go into the village for alms food, and then whatever she got, she'd eat, and then wash her bowl the rest of the day, totally free. But when she came back from her alms round in the village, she noticed that there was a hole in her spare robe. A mouse had been living in her cave and chewed a hole in her robe. And that wasn't the first time this bad mouse making bad karma, chewing a hole in a nun's robe. And as she was sewing a patch in this robe, again, she started to think, how many times have I got to keep sewing a hole in my robe because, this bad mouse? What if I get a cat? If I have a cat, it won't catch the mouse. The mouse will scarp as soon as it smells a cat. And then if I have a cat, I won't have to do any more sewing of my robes. And a cat is a nice, cuddly companion too. So, the next time she went into the village, she asked one of the villagers, "Have you got a spare cat I can borrow?" I said, "Yeah, you can have one. I've got heaps of them." So they gave her a cat. And now when she went in arms round, she never had to worry about a hole in her robe, but she had to ask for some milk and some fish to feed the cat. Just a bit of an extra burden. So she had to ask for some milk to feed the cat to keep the mouse away. And after doing this for a while, she started to think, it's just such a burden, always asking for milk, from these people. What if I get my own cow? Because if I have a cow, I won't need to ask for milk anymore. So she did a fundraiser, like we do every now and again, and just raised some money and bought a cow. So now she had a cow to give the milk, to feed the cat, to keep the mouse away, so her robes wouldn't need to be patched all the time. But then, if you just have a cow, you can't have a cow staying in monastery, and because also she needed to feed the cow. And you can't just feed the cow with leftovers from your alms food. So every day she had to ask the villagers for some grass. To feed the cow, to feed the cat, to keep the mouse away, who kept biting holes in her robe. And she thought, it's such a burden, always asking people for things. So what if I just ask them once for a field, just a small paddock, so I can have the paddock to supply the grass, to feed the cow, to feed the cat who will keep the mouse away, who keeps biting my robes. So they managed to give her a field. And once she had a field, she thought, it's so hard looking after the field and milking the cow and making sure the cow's all right. What if I have a little boy, a little attendant boy? So she went into the village. You got any sort of naughty boy in this village? We've got heaps of them, they said. because they can look after my cow and do all the milking and stuff, and in return I'll teach them some nice virtue and morality and meditation. It's a good deal. So they sent a boy to stay with the nun, because the boy had to look after the field in which the cow lived to supply milk to the cat who was going to keep the mouse away, so she didn't have to patch her ropes. But you can't have a boy staying with a nun in a cave. The boy had to have a little hut to stay in. So she went to the village and asked the villagers for some wood and some labourers to build a hut to keep the boy in, who would look after the field in which the cow lived to supply milk for the cat to keep the mouse away, who kept biting her ropes. And one day she was so busy looking after this building of the house, when someone came to ask her a question for meditation, she said, sorry, I'm too busy. I got to see the workers who are building the hut for the boy who looks after the field in which the cow lives, who supplies milk to the cat who keeps biting my robes. And that's when she realized her big mistake. This is how our life goes. We always think it's convenient. If I can get that extra room to put the tools in, which are going to look after the rest of the house. She realized the mistake. She told all the villagers to stop building the hut and take all the wood back. She sent the boy back to his family. She sold the field and gave it to some charity, gave back the cow, and sent the cat to a nice home. The next day she went for alms food. She felt so peaceful, not a worry in the world. And when she came back from alms food, the mouse had returned and bitten a hole in her robe. And quite happily she spent 5 minutes patching the robe. That was so much easier than looking after a boy who looked after the field, to look after the cow, to supply the milk, to the cat, to keep the mouse away. It was much easier when it was simple. And I love that story, which I've told many times, because it does give you an indication of how we get caught up. We think it'd be so convenient, you know, to get the car so I don't need to take the public transport. And then we've got to get a garage in which to put the car. And then we've got to get a insurance to look after the car, to actually get to work. And it's amazing just how stupid we are when it comes to materialism. Can't we keep life more simple? Now that is incredibly radical. I've often said, can't we have smaller houses to live in? Downsize, don't upsize. If you have got a big house, sell it and buy a small one. It's amazing just how much money you can save that way. You don't need a big car. Now, in these big cars, you see it on the freeway again and again and again. One person in the car. And it's taking up so much space. You know, in San Francisco, they've got lanes devoted to people, more than two people in the car. You can go in that lane. I remember reading a story in the newspaper, a funeral hearse went down that lane. There was only one driver in. But when he got caught, he said, but there's a stiff in the back. That counts as two. And it went to court, and the court actually decided a dead person doesn't count as number two. So he got fined. It's a very good argument, though. But wouldn't it be wonderful to have something simple for a change? Now, we're always trying to have that simplicity, but we always think, no, we can't have that simplicity because it's not convenient. Convenient for who? Is it really convenient to downsize? To have a more simple life? Because when we talk about materialism at what expense? It's not the expense of money, it's the expense of time. Just like that story of the nun. I've got no time to answer your questions because I've got to look after the workers who are building the hut, to look after the boy, to look after the cow. That's how complicated life can become. And why is this? It's because our values have been skewed. When we think, what is the most important thing in life? A lot of people don't even think about that because they're so caught up they don't have the time to think. To actually to realize what they're doing. Sometimes you need to be kicked up the bum, as they say, to realize, what am I doing with my life? And when they realize that, that's why we have retreats, that's why you come to places like this. That's why holidays are really for, just time to stop and to look at where you are and what you're doing and why you're doing it. And sometimes we realize that this is not the way I want to live. This is not the sort of world I like to leave my children. I want to leave this world a place where children can have more time. Because there are more things which are important. And what are those things which are important? Those things which are important are the spiritual qualities of life, the friendship, the time together, you know, the love, the kindness, the fellowship, being with one another, hanging out together, just telling jokes together, whatever. That's the most important thing of life. And because of an older, a former secretary of the Buddhist Society, she asked me if I'm going to tell this funny story today. It doesn't fit in at all, but it's a funny story, so here it goes. It just shows, who cares about, you know, teaching the Dhamma? This is just spending time with you. So this was a story of the man who fell into the sawmill. And he severed his hand. And his best friend saw that, put it in a plastic bag, sealed it, drove the fellow to the hospital, straight into the emergency room. When he went to visit his friend the next day, the hand was already attached. He was already in rehab. The wonders of modern surgeons are incredible. Just one day, and now severing his hand, it was stitched on again, already in rehab. A month later, when he was back at work, he fell into the sawmill again. This time he cut off his leg. His friend, now knowing what to do, put his leg in a plastic bag, sealed it hygienically, drove him to the hospital as fast as possible, straight into the emergency room, and then he went to visit his friend the next day. His leg had already been sewn on. He was on the treadmill. Rehab again. Amazing. And a month later he was back at work. No problem. And next time he fell into the sawmill, this time he cut off his head. So his friend put the head in a plastic bag, sealed it, drove him to the hospital as fast as possible, and, you know, straight into the emergency room. When he went to visit his friend the next day, he said, "Where is he? Where is he?" He said, "He's dead. Some stupid idiot put his head in a plastic bag and he suffocated." Now the reason I told that story is that that is the meaning of life there. Just sharing a silly joke, wasting time. Is it really a waste of time? Is a way of just bringing happiness and bringing people together. That's what life is all about. And of course, it costs no money to tell a stupid joke like that. But it's... But how much time do we have to do such things? Or are we so busy in life? Now, I think one of the problems with materialism, because I was reading a book the other day, you know, there's another meaning for the word materialism. It's not just, you know, the obsession with things and stuff in our life, which is called materialism. It's also, it's like a philosophy of modern science. And here, as a former scientist, I'm going to blame science for the materialism in our world, because it also means that idea that all your love, all of your kindness, all of that joy, all of that laughter is just some emanation from the brain. It has no existence apart from a brain. It's all just some parts of the brain lighting up, and that's all it is. It's just material stuff. There is no stream of consciousness. There is no heart. There is no love. That's just a myth. Falling in love is just some chemical reaction in your brain somewhere. When you have a kid, it's oxytocin, apparently, or something like that, you know, which makes you, you know, love the kid. It's all just chemical stuff, that's all. It's not real. And you find that in modern science, they try to explain anything and everything. There's just some mutation of the genes. And it takes away just this other part of life, which everybody knows is real. You know, if you love someone, if you care for them, if you're kind to them, is that just some effect of the brain? That just diminishes the most important part of life, the spiritual part of life, the religious part of life, the emotional part of life. But when, with the growth of you know, the materialistic view of science of the last 200 years, that has coincided, you know, with the materialism, you know, of possessions and things, because it gives importance and value to things, to stuff, to brains, to DNA, to chemicals, to chemical medicine, instead of another part of this world, which has not been validated by science or by our leaders and people who start fashions or trends in this world, the trendsetters of the world. And this is our big mistake. And I see a huge connection there between the materialistic view of science, which doesn't believe even consciousness exists. It's just an illusion caused by the brain. That type of science is being challenged. And as it is challenged, and it is put in its place, it's an important part of science, but it's not the be-all and end of science. I think at the same time that we can get more of the spirituality, which is growing as a rebellion against that type of science, materialistic view of the world, a materialistic view of life. In a materialistic view of life, you have one life, when you're dead, that's it, you're gone. Because what is this consciousness? Just part of the brain. When the brain dead, you're dead. And that's it. That means just any idea of an afterlife and the consequences of that afterlife by how you live in this life, karma if you like, that is totally ignored. Which means that the important parts of something like karma, you know, of kindness, generosity, giving, love, selflessness, service, all that important stuff, which is, you know, what religions are, should be about. Unfortunately, some religions are the worst culprits. That's why I'm really, really down on any religion which builds a big hall with lots of chandeliers and lots of marble and lots of stuff. You know, what religion should be doing is keeping it simple. This is when we're trying to celebrate, encapsulate the non-material part of life, the emptiness, the space. You know, even in this hall, we try really hard to see the walls. There's air cons on there, okay, I'll give you that. But there's no pictures, there's no ornaments, there's no stuff. Even behind here, we try and keep this as clear as possible, but people keep putting stuff on it, and we keep taking it out again. Why do people do that? Simplicity. Have you ever noticed on mountains? What happens with a mountain? The first person who climbs on it puts a flag on top. And the second person who climbs on it puts a restaurant on top. And you can't you leave mountains alone? Why do we have to do this? And it's and one of the reasons is because we don't value the simplicity and emptiness. Mountains are holy. You know, they always say that, you know, that's where holy people are supposed to sit, on top of mountains. Have you ever gone up on a mountain and seen a holy person? They used to be there before someone put a flag on and a restaurant on top of it. Then they've been pushed away now. That's the same with like space and emptiness. You know, that religions are not supposed to be emphasizing the material stuff, but the simplicity. Please go to Bodhinyana, where I've got pretty much control of that place. It's a simple place. It's not so many ornaments there. It's practical. You know, some of the rows are falling apart. Why? Because that's life. It does fall apart. So we want to keep it like that, because that is important. Because there we're celebrating and emphasizing the other part of life, the non-material part of life, the kindness, the peace, the freedom, the simplicity of life. This is really what Christmas should be about. So if you are a Buddhist, you haven't got your Christmas present yet for a Buddhist friend, follow the Dalai Lama cartoon example. Get an old shoebox. Gets an old paper, maybe old newspaper, it doesn't have to be not, you know, sort of fancy paper from the shop, and put nothing inside of it. You're a Buddhist, here you go. I'm giving you what you always wanted. Nothing. Oh, great, marvelous. Because you can do more with nothing. There's a Christian, I told this joke a few days ago, but it's an important joke. He came up to me and said, "Nothing is better than God." I said, "Yeah, exactly." The great emptiness, the void, nothing. Yes, you understand. I said, I didn't mean it that way. I did. Or, if you don't want to do that, you can play around with this idea of like Buddhist Christmas presents. Get a nice box. And just get some fancy paper, doesn't cost much, and put a little letter in. Just, I love you. And give that to your friend. Simple thing. Mean it. Or give another little box. Please forgive me. And send that to somebody. Wouldn't that be beautiful? You know, or to somebody you like. Put a little letter there. We'd like to hang out together for a while. Just simple things like that. Simple little wishes. Because what do you really want? Because sometimes what we want is to be loved, to be respected. Just say that to your boss. I respect you. Put that in a big box. Let them open up. I respect you. And mean it. Because sometimes that really works. This is one of my little mental exercises for meditation, if you haven't tried this yet. You know, it's using our materialistic ideas to give ourselves something very important. When you sit down in meditation, you get yourself nice and calm and peaceful. And then imagine, use the power of visualization to imagine. Imagine finding an old box, shoe box, and then sending yourself a Christmas present. And in that box, you put in, something like love. But don't just think love, just really start to imagine love, what it will be, whether it's a heart or whether it's a beautiful flower or freedom or whatever. Imagine what love is for you. Really get into it, for a minute or two. Then put it in the box and put the lid on top. If it's like forgiveness, letting go of the past or whatever, put forgiveness in it. Imagine what it's like, what forgiveness is. Now just build a picture of what forgiveness is. Put it in the box. And then imagine you get some very expensive wrapping paper and you wrap it all up very carefully. This is an important present. You don't just wrap it up quickly all over the place. Very quickly, very, very slowly rather than carefully. And then find this little ribbon. Imagine you find a nice little ribbon, trying a nice little bow on it. And after you've made the bow, get one of these little cards which you can attach to the bow, and you have to write the message. And you write the message very carefully. To me, with love, from me, XXX. And then, in your imagination, it's a nice exercise, in your imagination, you sort of put the box aside, and you imagine forgetting it. Just imagine, just pretend. And then you pretend, there's a box over there. It's a gift. I wonder who it's for. And then you open up the little card. To me. Ah, with love for me. Oh, isn't that nice? And then slowly, don't rip it apart, slowly you untie the ribbon. And then you open up very carefully, keeping the paper for another time so you don't rip it. You open up the paper very slowly. And then, I wonder what's inside. You can even rattle it a bit to see what's inside. And then you open it up. Ah, forgiveness. That's what I always wanted. Thank you. It works. Especially at this time. And this is actually how we can use materialism and change it to what's really important in life. Because what gift would you really want? Or rather, what do you need more than anything else in this world? So if no one else will give it to you, put it in your box. Send it to yourself. And open it. And receive your gift. Now you understand. These other things are far, far more important than materialism. And these things, you can get a cardigan, a pair of slippers or something. Yeah, you get that any day. But this is supposed to be a spiritual holiday. It's a time of meaning, getting the family together, not just playing cricket in the backyard or watching an old movie on TV or something, or playing video games. This is for the spiritual part of our life. And you should all know that spiritual part of life, which is really important, which makes you healthy and well, is just your fellowship and friendship and kindness and generosity and love. All those wonderful things in life which we don't get enough of. That is what life is really made of. And if you can do that and have time, you know why we should have this other part of life. Materials should really be there to give us the time to be with one another. But what happens? We never do get that time. We work all our life thinking, when I've got enough, then I can retire. By the time you're retired, you find all your superannuation is not worth half what it was supposed to be worth. You have to work a bit longer. And then you find out by the time you do actually retire, you're so old and decrepit, you can't really enjoy life anymore. Spend half the time going to the doctors. So why can't we enjoy it now? I mean that. Why can't we just spend a bit of time with one another? And just give each other that gift at this Christmas time. Of time with each other. Of time with our family, with our friends. Forgiveness, kindness, love. That is the sort of Christmas present we can give one another. It just costs. It does cost us a lot. It costs us this ability to let go of the hurt of the past. The ability to let go of our fear of trusting each other. The ability to let go of the fear of being vulnerable and loving one another and allowing oneself to be loved. It can be terrifying for many people. It costs, but my goodness, it's worth it. So we can try that. And it's also emphasizing in this world, this is not just coming from a brain. This is not something in the DNA. You can't find the love gene in the DNA. This doesn't exist. This is something which is more important than that. And this is something which, if you develop in this life, you know it's a spiritual part which will develop and keep developing in your future lives. Just, you know, as Eddie knows, we did his funeral for his mum last Wednesday. I did so many funerals. And I like funeral services because that's the time. Not only do I get ghost stories, because did I tell that ghost story last week about the hearse? Because I was telling somebody earlier. I know, I'm just going off track again, but it's a great story. People are always interested in ghost stories. This particular one, I did a funeral for one lady, and there was, I think she's here, Catherine. But anyway, for her son, tragic death, but was buried in the Chinese part of the cemetery in Calcutta, and that's a long walk from the gate. So I knew where it was, and it was a long walk. So you're walking up front, and I'm the priest, the monk, walking with the funeral director. And you know, she's obviously a senior funeral director, and I was having a chat to pass the time. You got any ghost stories? Well, I mean, she works in a funeral parlor. She's worked there for 20 years. She must have some ghost stories. I said, oh, yeah, I've got lots. What's your best ghost story? And this is the one she told me. It's fascinating. She said that, you know, this was a big funeral director's, you know, expensive one. And their hearse, the thing which you put the coffin in, the casket in, it's clean before every funeral. So maybe twice a day or three times a day that thing is clean, because it has to be perfect, you know, for the family. So there's one guy who's employed especially just to clean the hearse. And he just finished cleaning it, preparing it for the next funeral. And he locked the doors. And for no apparent reason, the windows steamed up. They became, you know, like covered with condensation on the inside. But then what happened next? Handprints started to appear on the condensation on the windows, all over the hearse. Something inside was trying to get out. That was true. She saw it. Everyone else saw it as well. The handprints coming on the hearse. That's really cool. But You know, it shows, you know, there's lots of things happen after people die. And if we could only accept that, that life carries on afterwards. This whole materialist thing about just one life, get as much out of it as you can and that's it at the end, that would all disappear. And these other qualities of life, you know, the things I've been talking about, they'll become more important. Just accepting that people get reborn, this life after death, that will stop a lot of the materialist, you know, stuff which we do in this world. That's why I make a big thing on talking about reincarnation or life after death. There's so much evidence about that. But there is also another part of materialism which I love to talk about, which is, I've done a talk roughly about two types of materialism, about, you know, the world of materialism against the spiritually, you know, the spiritual type stuff, you know, of kindness and love. But it's amazing just how many religions get into what was called spiritual materialism, which is, how many attainments can you get? How long can you meditate? We can have like a meditation Olympics. We can put, you know, the contenders from Australia against the contenders from the United States and New Zealand, see who can sit meditation longest for the gold medal. See who's the wisest. See whether Christianity is wiser than Buddhism. Even in Buddhism, there's three main strands of Buddhism. There's the Theravada, which is us, the Mahayana, and there is the Vajrayana Tibetans. So we can have a compassion contest to see which one is the most compassionate. Isn't there something wrong there? Of course, the whole idea of competition is another part of materialism. Which religion is better than the next religion? My temple's bigger than your temple, na 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 na. I get more people come to my talks and you get coming to your talks, na 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 na. Unfortunately, that is so prevalent amongst religions these days. And that is also what we call spiritual materialism. It's the same sort of stuff. Instead of actually getting physical stuff and say, look at me, I've got a bigger house. I've got a Porsche. That's nothing. I've got a roller. That's nothing. I've got a personal aircraft. That's nothing. I've got a personal rocket. No one's got that yet, but give them time. All this sort of stuff. We have the very same in religion as well. What's that old joke? Here we go. A golden oldie. Four ladies in Claremont having a cup of coffee. Catholics, please excuse me. It has to be Catholics. And one of them, so turns around to their friends. I'm so proud. My son was ordained as a Catholic priest yesterday. I'm so proud of him. When he goes, and when people, women come and see him, they bow down and they call him father, even though he's only 23. And I'm so proud of him. And the other lady, sipping her latte, turned around and said, that's nothing. That's absolutely nothing. My son, ordained as a priest a long time ago, he's now a bishop. When he comes into the room, people actually bow down, they kiss his ring, and they call him Your Grace. And the third one said, absolutely nothing. My son was a bishop a long time ago. He's now a cardinal. When he comes into a room, all the girls, they kneel on the floor, and they call him Your Eminence, Your Eminence. I'm so proud of him. And then the fourth lady, sipping her coffee, they're all looking at her. What about your son? She finished her coffee and said, my son never joined the church. Instead, he joined the Fremantle Dockers. He's 6'6", blue-eyed, gorgeous looking, very famous. Whenever he comes into the room, all the girls fall on the floor and say, my God, my God, my God. It's a nice old joke. There's a whole pride thing. It sucks, doesn't it? You know, who's better than the other person? So please, that's not part of religion, that's not part of life. That is what materialism gets you into. And this is not the meaning of life. Can't we have it? Well, we don't say one religion is better than the other, or one person in one part of the religion is better than the other. Can't we actually just get rid of all those silly conceits? Instead, we just respect each other for who we are. A beautiful respect. Because when one person is not better than the other, all that silly competition, that anger, and all that stress inside of you, you know, to try and be as good as other people, or even be better, that is so much stress, and that is what fuels materialism, that's what fuels the competition between religions. My religion is the best, so I'm going to kill you just to prove it. And that's a terrible thing of our life. Why can't we actually just go back to the other part of the world, the really non-materialistic part? You know, does love choose between religions? I said this last week, I was talking about conversion. I have this wonderful pair of disciples over in Singapore. I think she is a Buddhist. Her husband is a Muslim. And they've got two children. One is a Hindu. The other one is a Christian. And I've been asking them for years to please have a third child to become a Jew, to get the whole set. You know, why not? Isn't that a beautiful symbol for life? In a garden, do you only have one flower? But you have many flowers. And they complement each other. In an orchestra, as I said last week, you have many different instruments, and they play together in harmony. We don't need to be better. In an orchestra, which is the best instrument? You can't say which one is better, whether you know, the flute is better than the violin. You need all of them. They're all important. That's why each one of you are important. You're all necessary. It's not a factor of being better or being worse. You know, we all got our place in this world, a little niche. And if you weren't there, that niche would not be filled, and this world would be much worse. There are 7 billion people in this world. And you are important. Without you, the world wouldn't be what it is. It's a beautiful thought. You don't have to be better. You don't have to be worse. Just be you. And be happy. And respectful that you are you. With all your faults and warts and sort of idiosyncrasies. I've got heaps of idiosyncrasies. I was born in English. English are always eccentric. That's just in our genes. It's nice being eccentric, telling stupid jokes like this. But what that really means is you're human and you're happy in your skin. You're happy under your bald head. This is who you are. And you're at ease with it. So there's no competition anymore. There's no trying to be better. There's no trying to achieve anything. Even how I was taught by my great master, Ajahn Chah, he told me again and again and again, you are meditating, you are practicing, you're walking this path, not to try and attain anything, but to let go of things. To be as free as possible, to let go, not to attain. To let go of your physical possessions, first of all, which I said when we're walking through the roads of Thailand, just with hardly anything. So free. You know, people, I would have been the poorest person, one of the poorest people in the world. No, even now I've got no money, no credit card, no superannuation, no investments, nothing. Just how happy you are. Nothing to worry about. Stock market goes up, stock market goes down. Doesn't worry me. Dollar goes up, dollar goes down. I haven't got any dollars. Doesn't worry me. Employment rate goes up, employment rate goes down. I've got job security. And I've got retirement benefits which are out of this world. But, you know, you don't need that. You don't need a big house. Now, if there is an economic downturn, as I said last week, where will you go to? Not your savings. That would probably be wiped out too. You go to your friends and loved ones. That is your investment. That's your superannuation. That is what is there for you when you have difficult times. Not your money, not your possessions, but your friends. And all those beautiful relationships which you've built up over your lifetime. That is your investment. And even in this life, you know that is what will care for you and look after you, even in the most difficult of times. So don't get caught into this, I've got to save money for the hard times. No, save people, save kindness, save generosity. Have this big bank of these beautiful qualities which you've built up over your life. And then you'll have no worries or anxiety at all about the future. There'll always be people there to care for you and look after you, no matter what. That is the meaning of the non-material part of the life. So during this Christmas time, please remember that. Yeah, you may be a bit late now, you've already been down the shops and bought all this stuff. But if you haven't, and you're still looking for the Christmas present to buy, and you haven't been able to think of it yet, a box with a little note, I love you, I care for you, you're a really important person in my life. Just put that in a box and send it to somebody. Why not? Because that's the non-material part of the world which is the most important. Thank you for listening. Okay, now that's terrible. Sadhus. If anyone go to my retreats, you know we do really big sadhus. Really give it some heart. Okay, now follow me. Sadhu. 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 Sadhu just means good, great, well done. Okay, so I did it now by yourselves. Okay, three big sadhus. Sadhu. 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 That's much better, thank you very much. And Merry Buddhamas to you all. Okay, we've got some questions. So get questions from overseas first of all. See what we've got. First of all, question one is from... What's this? From North Pole, Santa Claus. You are putting me out of business, Ajahn Brahm. Sorry, Santa, but you need to retire. Second question. I just made that up. From Singapore, how do I balance the need to have a better life for my family, to contribute to community, like making donations and spiritual practice? Is this also considered materialism? It's a great question because so many parents think, I have to work hard and get stuff for my kids. But really, it's not the money which your kids will appreciate. There's a time they spend, you know, with their parents. Look, my own life. You know, just thinking of my dad, you know, the one thing which I always remember about my father, just an event which happened when I was maybe about 11, 12. You know, he took an afternoon off work, and we went, just myself and my dad, to the local park just to play football together. Didn't cost him anything, but I remember that time. To me, it was really important for a boy to spend time with his dad. That was one of the most beautiful memories I have with my father. You may have memories with your parents. And it's not when they gave you just a big gift or a big bike or something. It's the time you spend with each other. That's what your kids need. You know, some time ago in Singapore, it was in the newspapers, people took a cutting of a kid in Singapore who was found on the bottom of the high-rise apartment building. He'd jumped off. Committed suicide. And the incredible thing was his suicide note. And his suicide, this is real, people in Singapore may remember this. His suicide note was, all I wanted is to spend time with my mum and dad. Well, doesn't that get you to the heart? That's all he wanted. That's a real story. He didn't have time with his parents. And that doesn't cost anything. In fact, you're so busy working all the time that you basically, that's not doing the best thing you possibly do with your kids. So if you want a better family life, it doesn't cost anything except just finding time for them. best schools, the best clothes and stuff. You all know, hopefully, Emotional Intelligence, written by Daniel Goleman. Kids do well in life not because of their intellectual achievements, because their emotional achievements. And that's what they learn from their mum and dad. To connect, to have this emotional connection with people. You know, the boys not to be afraid to talk to a girl they like. The girls not being afraid. You know, this beautiful emotional just being comfortable in your own skin. And being confident. That's the stuff which makes people successful in life. Not the sort of what they teach you at school, but what you learn from your mum and dad who are kind, spend time with you. So if you want a better life for family, spend time with your kids. Money is not that important for your kids. And for the spiritual practice of making donations, look. You know, Singapore, just how many rich temples there are in Singapore. And what do the rich temples do? They tell you to spend more time with your kids. So you're not spending time with your kids to make donations, to give to the temples, to tell you to spend more time with your kids. There's a disconnect there, okay. As a teacher, you'd be much happier. The whole purpose we've got temples for is actually for people to be happy. The temples are not there to be big and so gaudy. The temples are there so people can be happy. So instead of giving a donation to the temple, give it to your kids in time. And that comes from me. Okay, question 2 from Sri Lanka. How does meditation help to build simplicity? Oh, that's an excellent question. It's because when you're meditating, you feel what simplicity is. Like at the end of the meditation today, I asked you, peace. Don't just have it as a word, feel it. What's peace like? You know, it's so delightful. When you have peace right in front of you, even your heart, you're meditating, at the end of meditation, you've just got peace there. You don't want anything else. You don't need anything else. All the gifts in the world are just nothing compared to peace. Peace is simple. Peace is not something complicated. Yeah, okay, people like me spend an hour every Friday evening talking about peace and explaining it in so many different ways, but please, it's not a complicated thing. It's the most simple thing of all. When all the complexity disappears, when all the stuff vanishes, when all the coming and going stops, what's left? What was already here to begin with? Peace. We spend all our life chasing peace, chasing it and chasing it. And what we're doing is actually going away from peace. We stop all this chasing. We find we've had peace all along. We were running in the wrong direction. So just stop. It's Christmas time, you're on holiday. Please, for goodness sake, don't think, what am I going to do today? I've got this whole day. And go look in the TV guide, what movies are on, or the cricket, or who you can go and visit, or what, you know, where you can go, what beach you can go to. Don't do that. Just sit at home and do absolutely nothing. Just enjoy. When people ask, what are you doing today? I'm busy. What are you doing? Nothing. Make that really important. Enjoy just being with each other. If you do go out, have no plans. It's great just going out, you know, no plans. You get in your car, I don't know where I'm going. Just see where you end up. It's a beautiful life like that. And you just go for a walk. And don't have a plan. Where are you going to go? What time are you going to get there? How are you going to get there? You miss some interesting things in life. You just go for a walk down the beach, see what happens. Meet some interesting people. You may find an interesting little cafe you've never been to before. When you plan everything, you miss out so much on life. So in this Christmas time, no plans, no achievements, nothing to get done. And for goodness sake, please, you women, don't tell your husbands all the jobs they've got to do over Christmas. You know, clean this up, clean that up, do this and do that. Oh, God. That's what they do at work. Just hang out with each other. Sometimes it's a bit frightening, isn't it? Just hang out with each other, nothing to do. That's why people can't meditate. They forgot how to enjoy doing nothing. We always have to do something. We miss things. So just spend time with each other. Beautiful way. So thank you for those 2 questions. And thank you for listening this evening. Any questions from the audience here? Going. God, no questions. Too late, sorry. No, come on. Come on, go. My New Year's Eve party, yes.
I wouldn't have anywhere to get home. I don't suppose there'd be any way I could sleep on the floor somewhere in this.
Sleep on the floor, tossing out in this place.
I'm not fussing.
Yeah, there'll be plenty of ways of getting home. Because there's so many people coming, you just ask anyone going this direction, where do you live?
Quinana.
Quinana, that's not that far away. Someone may make a detour on the way back to South Perth. Yeah, something will happen. We won't let you sleep outside. There'll be a place somewhere.
Thank you, Jamra.
Very good. Okay, very good. Okay, so we can now pay respects to the Buddha, Dhamma, and the Sangha, and you can all line up to ask your questions afterwards.
Arahan Sama Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi Suvakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami Supatipanno Bhagavato Savaka Sangho Sangham Namami.
Very good. Remember, if you bow, it does release nitrous oxide in the brain, which makes you happy. It's laughing gas. It's been proven by science. So, if you just bow for fun.